My name's Dave. I'm a compulsive overeater. I came to Overeaters Anonymous August 17th, 1976. So that means only one thing. I'm old, thanks to this program. That's what that means. So I got to be 80 years old on this earth because of Overeaters Anonymous. And here's a picture of, I'm gonna scoot out of the way. That's an old picture I dug up. And I think that's a little bit before I got in the program. But mustache and sideburns, and that's what I did. And I was hiding from other men, I was afraid of men. But anyway, I got on this earth on May 22nd, 1944, by being born to a woman named Mamie Alacio in Oakland, California, and she and my father, William Henderson, United States Navy. I was what they call a war baby, and my daddy was in the Navy, and it was one of those things that he got had. I guess he had a girl in every port. My mother was one of them, and so I was a mistake. Don't take that wrong, because. And so they put me in, they got me in, put me in an orphanage. They put me up for adoption. And so my parents that took care of me, Dorothy Elizabeth Burge and Albert Edwin Burge, adopted me out of the orphanage. And the lady told, I read my diary that my sister wrote about me, which I'm very grateful that she did that, because I've learned a lot about my past from reading the diary. And the lady at the orphanage said, this little boy is cross-eyed, and you're going to have to take him and have an expensive operation on his eyes. And there's a lot of other children here that need to be adopted that are healthy, and you won't have to spend a lot of money on them. And so my mother said, I want that one right there. I want that guy right there. So that's how great my mother was and is. So that's how I started out. Unfortunately, my parents didn't get along with each other, and they fought and separated most of my childhood, which not good for a little kid to go through all that stuff, And but they were always good to me. I always had a roof over my head. I don't feel sorry for myself. I had one of everything. But this thing here took it the wrong way, And I had a lot of questions, as kids do. I said, how come my parents didn't want me? And my mother would always try to gloss it over by sitting me down and giving me a glass of milk and a box of crackers. I won't tell you what kind of crackers are, but I liked them, and I ate a lot of them, because I had a lot going on inside of my little body head. That was the beginning of my overeating. As I, we used to write the history of your obesity. It was one of the first Westminster questions when I came in. Anyway, I won't get ahead of myself. But my parents finally divorced when I was 15, and of course, I kind of figured that was my fault, because they had this screwed up kid, and that probably was the problem. And kids do that; they blame themselves, So I did that, and. And then as I got older, I got bigger, and I had names. When I was in automobile racing, my name was Porky, and I wore that as a badge of honor, and foolishly. And kids called me Fatso and all kinds of names happens. And so I just assumed that that was my lot, and so. When I was about 20 years old, I went to work for a guy in Los Angeles, and he had the reason I knew him. I met him at the races, and he wanted me to come up there and work on his car. And I, yeah, that's a big deal. I get to go to L.A. So I moved up there in his big house, and he had a big Cadillac automobile and all that stuff, and. He was big too. So he said, well, you need to go to the diet doctor in Azusa, So I went to Dr. Stanley Z. Gilbert's, and he gave me a shot and a bag of pills, and I'd take a pill before each meal, and I lost weight. I got down from 100, was 141 down to 190 pounds, and he bought me some new clothes and everything, and man, I was uncomfortable. That's one thing we don't talk about is us big guys, when we lose all our weight, it gets mighty uncomfortable because I didn't know who the hell I was. Everybody was telling me how good I looked, and that felt made me feel very uncomfortable because I couldn't live up to it, and because I was a mess. And so I ended up moving back down to San Diego and living with my mother, and I just kept doing what I was doing, and getting bigger and bigger. And then I met a woman, and she had two children, and so I ended up marrying her and adopting her children, which adopted kids adopt other kids. I found out later on. When I did inventory, my sponsor said, "Look at all the patterns you repeated. That's what you do. You just keep repeating the patterns, because you're like your mother and you're like your father in a lot of ways, and I was too, and still am some ways. Not all of them are bad, but anyway, I got to being sick and tired of being a fat guy, and I heard about I'm trying to put this together. I told my story so many times, but I went to the doctor because I wanted to lose weight. That's what it was. And she says, "Here, follow this food plan, and come back and see me in a month." So hey, okay. So I followed the food plan, and I lost weight. I lost, all that water comes out of it, whatever. And she patted me on the head, said, "Keep coming back, So I came back, and I didn't lose much weight as I lost last month. Well, then she told me, "Well, you're not going to lose the same amount of weight every month, She explained the whole thing, and I said, "Okay." So, but I kept losing weight. And well, then Christmas came around, and the guys in the shop said, "You're not going to screw Christmas up with your damn diet, Dave. We know you're on a diet and you're losing weight, but you're not going to screw Christmas up because we're having a potluck, So go on your diet Monday, just go back on it Monday." Made a lot of sense to me. Had a lot of good food there, So I went. So I kind of, I, you know, I'm a people pleaser like everybody else. So I enjoyed my potluck, and Monday never came. I know that's never happened to anybody here, but that's what happened to me. And so I went back to that diet doctor, and I said, "Look, your diet didn't work. I need this stomach bypass surgery I read about. Looked like a pretty good deal." And she said, "Well, you're not a candidate for that. You don't have, in those days, you don't have high blood pressure or congestive heart failure, anything that we try to give that help to those people that have all those problems. You're healthy so far, Dave, So she said, wanted me to go back on the food plan. I said, "Well, I don't think that's going to work because I think about, I mean, I had part of it down. I said, I eat all day long. I think about food all the time. It's terrible, And she said, "Well," I said, "Well, I think I need a psychiatrist because I think I'm crazy." And I did, I guess I'd started to hit a bottom. And she said, "Well, I don't think you need a psychiatrist. I think you need a support group. That's what you need." She says, "I know of two: Weight Watchers and Overeaters Anonymous." She says, "The only thing I know about them is one costs money and the other one's free." So I took the free one, And so I went to my first meeting, got a sponsor. They said, "That's what I did. What they told me to do." I was desperate, and they said, "Get a sponsor," and I got a sponsor. And the sponsor said, "Eat three meals a day. Here's the food plan, another food plan, and." Three meals a day, nothing in between, except coffee, tea, no sugar, flour, or wheat. Weigh and measure your food on the food plan. And I did, and I lost 130 pounds in a little over a year. Probably too fast. I'm sure it was too fast, you know, because I had other medical problems I won't go into. But and so, you know, that's when that, you know, that I was on a high. I'm telling you, I had that, what they call it, a pink cloud. I don't think that's a good thing to tell people they're on a pink cloud, because that was part of my journey. My life has always been destination oriented. If I just had a new car, a new wife, a bigger house, more money, I'd be happy. So I live in this I've always lived in this five-dimensional world. What I touch, feel, taste, smell, or hear, you know, that's how I live. You know, like I'm just a regular, like most human being folks are, you know. And I would say, I'm just trying to get ahead. I'm trying to stay ahead of it, you know, because it's always chasing me, you know. And I had two kids and a wife, and I'm trying to feed them and go to work every day and come home. And I deserve to have a good meal and lay down on the couch and go to sleep, you know. But what I didn't have was the spiritual. And because they talked about it to me. They invited me to the book study meeting, you know, Clydie and Midge, two nice ladies. And so Helen and I, my sponsor, we called those people that went to the step study and read the big book, the God Squad. Those were the God Squad. They were different than us. You know, they were weird. And Helen would say, you know what the program says, take what you need and leave the rest. So we did the food plan and everything. We left the rest. Well, that's the best I could do. You know, I learned that later on. I wasn't ready for the other stuff. Well, then they invited me to be on the retreat committee, and they invited me to go to the intergroup, and I needed more OA, you know, and I was the only man around. I finally met a couple more men, Jose and Virgil, and in the 70s, there wasn't a lot of men in the program down here, so I had to sponsor women, and of course, I lost all that weight, and people thought I had some kind of an answer. They said, well, how do you abstain? I said, just don't eat no matter what. That was my slogan. I heard that somewhere. All you got to do is just don't eat no matter what, you know, no matter what's going on, don't eat, you know. I'm kind of remorseful that I used to say that to people, but I thought I had an answer, you know, because, you know, I had that gift, you know, and I had the willingness to follow my food plan and weigh and measure my food. And so, I relapsed later on, and to make a long story short, my wife didn't like me going to OA meetings. Happens to a lot of people, especially because women were calling all the time, you know, and I was going to their retreat every other month. We had a retreat in San Diego every other month, and I was taking a shower and cleaning up and wearing better clothes and helping around the house, you know, which I never did before. So I understand today what happened, because I really changed. You know, we tried counseling and everything, but she just didn't like it. And so that marriage ended. And then I was out on my own, and I, you know, I did, my daughter was mad at me. I could see my kids. My son was getting in all kinds of trouble, and so I was just very depressed. I went into a depression in the program with all my weight off, and I was running around scared. I was scared to death, and I went to a Tuesday night meeting over here in Point Loma in the bank, and there was this man there. His name was Pete, and he came over from the AA program. And that man, he had a spiel, you know, and it turns out Pete was a Carnegie graduate, and he was a salesman. And I thought, this guy's full of, you know what, you know. And so he took us out to coffee. While we were at coffee, he said, you know, we got to talking to each other. And I didn't like him at first, you know. And he says, so you got divorced? I says, I'm divorced too, you know. I said, yeah, I'm sleeping on Rick White's couch. And he says, I'm sleeping in my car. Why don't we get an apartment together? And I went, oh, man, I don't want to live with this guy. You know, he's full of this God business and all this other stuff. And I don't know. I don't trust him, you know. And so, but I was so damn lonely. If you'd be hanging out with me, man, I was there. Even if, you know, you weren't somebody I wanted to hang out with. So we got an apartment, you know, and First thing he says is, yeah, there's somebody coming over here to talk, you know, in our apartment. You're going to let people in our apartment? I never let anybody in my house. And so he said, well, this isn't our apartment, Dave. It's God's apartment. Oh, okay. It's God's apartment. Well, God ain't paying the rent. I am, you know, that's my argument, you know. And I got five left. Okay, good. I'll try to wrap it up in five. And so so he had this old car and it burned oil, and he was picking people up and taking them to meetings, you know. And I says, you know, I'm going out here and cleaning the spark plugs every other day, and you're taking these people to meetings and bringing them home. And how are you going to get back and forth to work? He says, it's God's car. It's going to be all right. God's going to take care of it. I said, oh, my God. And then one day it just all fell down on me, and I was in my bedroom crying. And he says, what's the matter? What's upsetting you? He's a great guy. And I said, look, we don't have any furniture. We don't have any silverware. We don't have a TV. We don't have a couch. We don't even have beds. I'm sleeping on the floor, and Pete, you're sleeping on the floor. What do you mean there's nothing wrong? He says, in 2 months, God is going to have this place full of furniture. I went, oh, here we go with the God. God's, yeah, this, you know. Well, you know what? In 2 months, probably before then, the place was full of furniture, silverware. We had to give, he said, and he even said this, we're going to have to give some of it away. We'll have so much of it. You know, that God, I realize today that God put him in my life for a reason, by divine appointment. I needed somebody like that that was gentle with me, and he was, and that taught me. And he's got about 50 years of sobriety now, and I make sure I call him up every year, and probably more, he's moved away, to tell him how much I appreciate him teaching me that there is a God. But I had to see it. God knew I had to see it out here in the world. I needed to see the miracle of what Pete believed in that I didn't, you know. And so, you know, that's, you know, so I remarried, and my wife, just to wrap it up, my wife passed away in 2014, and she died of alcoholism, but she died sober. And our house was like that apartment. She had a homeless lady, Peggy, in here, cleaned her up, and Peggy was sleeping on the couch, and Mike was sleeping in the bedroom. He was sober, alcoholic, living in his car. And when it got cold, Pat would say, get Mike, go down and get Mike and bring him up here and put him in the bedroom. You know, it's too cold for him to be out there. And she was, she would stay up all night baking cookies for the Alano Club down here. They called her the cookie lady. Anyway, but I was really proud of her, and I'll wrap it up. We were laying there one night, and there was a bunch of noise next door. And I said, Pat, what's that noise over there? She says, oh, that's Anthony fighting with his mother. Well, Anthony was this crazy young guy and lived with his mother next door. And I used to wait in my car in the garage when he screeched in there with his car, and he'd slam the door, cussing and screaming, and go up the elevator. I waited, he went up I was scared of him, you know, violent. And she went over there, that little bitty woman went over there and knocked on the door and said, you're taking me to an AA meeting down here at the club tomorrow. You're an alcoholic. That's love. And during the pandemic, I was walking across this parking lot over there. Anthony and his mother, Ray, they moved over here. And I was walking through the parking lot to come home. And my wife had passed away quite a few years after that. And car pulled out in front of me, blocked my path, and rolled down the passenger window. And Zed said, is that you, Dave? And I said, yeah. I stuck my head in the window. I says, Anthony, how you doing? He says, I'm going to get my 10-year token. Pat saved my life. I cried all the way home, you know, but that's the 12th step. That's a great example of the 12th. That's love that we have in this fellowship, you know. And I've been a sponsor for a long time. I get to listen to a lot of people's problems. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing about being a sponsor that maybe a lot of people don't know, that don't think they want to take that mantle up, is you hear stories, you know, in 48 years. You hear stories that you think, man, you know, I get off the phone, I go, Praise God, I don't have any problems today, comparatively speaking, you know. And, you know, like I said, God's taken care of me for 80 years. Really good, too. I mean, I'm doing great. You know, this week I walked 6 miles 3 days, 3 of the days. I can't do it today because I'm leading this meeting and I have to go to work. But life's good here with Dave because God's taking care of me.